All right, Parshas Truma, which on page 444. Before we start, a very, very big welcome to Rona.
Thank you,
Ben. Welcome back.
Thank
we missed you.
Thank you. Very good to be back.
Thank you.
What they say, there's no place like home.
That's right. Okay, so Parshas Truma is an exciting Parsha. It comes right after Yisro and Mishpatim, right? We'll see, actually, there's a connection there which we'll go into in a moment. But essentially, it's one parasha. It's the parasha to do with the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan. It's the mitzvah to build a Mishkan, which includes building the Beis HaMikdash, according to the Rambam, and in fact, even has consequences to today in terms of building places of learning and davening, and so on and so forth. So let's just have a look a little bit just at the very beginning, and then we'll explore it. So the pasuk says, "Vayedaber Hashem u'Moshe leimer." Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, "Daber el bnei Yisrael, speak to the bnei Yisrael, v'yikhuli truma, and let them take for me, let them donate for me a truma, an offering, v'eis kol ish ashe yidvenu liboy, from people, from anyone who will donate and will want to give voluntarily, tikhu es trumasi, you should take my truma." And then it says, "V'zois ha'truma," what is this truma, what is this separation, what is this offering, ashe tikhu me'itam, that you should take from them. So then it lists a whole bunch of materials, zav, kesef, nechoshes, gold, copper, gold, silver, copper, wool, and so on and so forth. So, and then after that, after it tells us what to donate, it then goes into the various kalim, the various vessels of the Mishkan. Which are the Aron, the Ark, of course, is the first one, that was the holiest one. The shulchan, the table, and the menorah. I just want to point out something interesting. It's a famous thing, but I just was coming across it. I'm not going to go into this, but just a little bit. So you have in front of you the picture. That picture, actually, the further top one, is actually a drawing that the Rambam himself made. They found it in the manuscripts of the Rambam, right? Where he describes the menorah and the various different decorations that the menorah had. The flowers, the balls, and the cups. And there's a couple of interesting things here, just to point out. I mean, it's sort of drawn more to scale. It's more like the bottom one. What's interesting is the following: that you, first of all, you see that Rambam drew it diagonally. See that the menorah, not like the one everyone's used to. Yeah, the branches diagonally.
Yeah.
Right. So not like, I'll show you what I mean. If you go to page 451 in the article, you'll see that they draw the menorah the way it's often depicted. Right? See that? 451, that little picture there? That was around, right? It's diagonal, so then I'm going to do that. Rashi seems to say also, the shita of Rashi also is that it's alachsan, it was diagonal. Now, the reason that the menorah always became known as round, there's a simple historic reason for that, and it was one of the proofs, or the apparent proofs, not like the Rambam, is that the drawing of the menorah on Titus's arch is round. Right? In Rome, there's the famous arch of Titus, and essentially when the Yidden came into Golis, into the exile after the second destruction of the second temple, so Titus was the general, he took the Yidden into the and he marched them through that arch. He marched them through that gate. Supposedly carrying the menorah, which then became an inscription on the gate. Which therefore led everyone to think that it must be, and there are some opinions like that, it must be that the menorah was round, because that's the way they drew it there. Right? Which is the menorah. Not everyone agrees. The Rambam didn't agree with that. The Rambam drew it diagonal. Rashi seems to say the word alachsan also, which means diagonal, and others. There's various explanations about what that means, so why the one in the Titus arch therefore will be round. So we know from Shlomo HaMelech, from Tanakh, from the first Beis HaMikdash, that there wasn't only one menorah, there were other menorahs around the temple that were more decorative. And therefore it's very possible they weren't actually carrying that menorah, they were carrying other menorahs, and so on. But there's another interesting difference that the Rambam does. One of the things the menorah had, in this week's parasha it's described later, it had gevi'im, which are cups. Right? You see those triangles? They're supposed to be cups. Right? Now, the Rambam says, when he describes the menorah and he drew this picture, he says the cups were Koisus Alexandrian, which means they're like Alexandrian cups. What that means is, apparently, Well, what the difference between a regular cup and an Alexandrian cup is that the Koisos Alexandrian...
Sorry, Rabbi, the cup is the triangle, not the half circle.
No, no, the triangle, yeah.
The triangle.
Which the Rambam drew upside down. So those cups that he talks about more like cones, that's what he meant. In other words, they're narrow at the bottom and wide on the top, right? Now, if you look at that picture on 451, okay, they also have them, but not like the Rambam, you see that? In fact, you see a little thing that says Gevir, a decorative cup?
Yeah.
But there's the cup the right way up. You see that? They've drawn the right way up, right? Looks like the Rambam drew them upside down. And I think there's 24 of them in the menorah, right?
Okay, but I'm totally joking. You should put this in front of the camera so people see the issue.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. So this is the menorah. This is the Rambam's own drawing. And he drew the cups, 24 of them, upside down. Now, there is a contemporary commentary that writes in the Rambam, the Kapach Rambam is known, and he wants to argue that they're not supposed to be upside down, they're supposed to be the right way up. So he says, we see the Rambam himself drew it that way, he drew them upside down. So he says, loidok, meaning the Rambam wasn't specific. I mean, you can see he wasn't specific in this because he wasn't specific. He didn't draw them to 100% scale either, right? Like the cups weren't all the way down the branch, you know, it was more like the bottom one, and so on and so forth. He says, loidok, he just wasn't particular on how he drew it. The Rebbe once said a very important sikh. The Rebbe had a very distinct view on the menorah. He held that the menorah was specifically diagonal, not round, like the Rambam and Rashi. And he said also that it means that the cups are upside down. He said it's very far-fetched to say, like when you draw something, a measurement, so it's logical to say, I'm just drawing it to show you what it looks like, and you're not particular on the exact to scale millimeter of the drawing. But to say when you draw 20-something cups, and you drew them all upside down, to say loidok is a bit far-fetched. And therefore it appears that according to the Rambam, they were in fact upside down. The question then is, why would you have a cup upside down? Why is it a decorative thing, right? You'd expect it to be like the one that they have here, which is more the right way up. Yeah?
It looks like, on the picture, some upside down, but the top ones are the right way.
In the picture, they drew them the right way up.
Yeah, but the ones right next to the candle holder is low, it's down. It's pointing down.
No, but that's not a cup. That's just the way, that's the menorah itself. There's three on each. You see, there's three upside down, up, right. If you look at the picture, yeah. So it's three on each branch. That's the cups. That thing is there, is not the cup. That's just part of the design.
Oh.
Yeah. So he gave a very beautiful explanation. I'll just share with you. That what's the difference between a cup that you drink from or a cup that you do upside down, right? So a cup that you drink from is you taking from the cup. A cup that you pour upside down is the cup pouring something else. Now, we know in the Beis HaMikdash, there was actually a bit of a theme. We know this from Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, when he built the first temple, the first Beis HaMikdash. So the Tanakh says that he built it in such a way that it was Chaloynes Shkufim Atumim, which means like this. In olden days, when they had windows didn't mean a glass window like we have today, right? The word Chaloyn means a window, we found that in Tanakh. But it didn't mean like we have a window today. It meant an opening in the wall that would let in air or light, right? The way they used to build them is they used to have very thick walls, right? We see them today in Israel, and Ir David, in this place, you can see the thick walls of old. And they would make slits in the windows, but they would do it in such a way that the slits on the outside of the wall was narrow, on the inside it was wide. The idea was that the sunlight that comes through the narrow part can then spread to the rest of the room. Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, and he had windows, and he did it the exact opposite way. He had the narrow part inside, and the wide part outside. Why? Symbolizing that the Beis HaMikdash that was there not to receive light, it was there to give light. Right? It says, Mimenu yoitza oira l'chola oilam. The Beis HaMikdash was a place that from there light emanated to the rest of the world. It didn't need light. It was light. And therefore it was white. Similarly, before we get to the cups, and the menorah, the way they kindled the menorah each night, there were six branches in the middle branch. The three on either side, the wicks used to face inward, which is not normally how you would light a candelabra. If you lit a candelabra and you were trying to maximize the light effect, you make the wicks face outwards so that the light spreads, right? But in the menorah it wasn't like that. The Gemara says it was facing inward. Same idea, because v'chila oira hutzarach, does Hashem need a light? It doesn't need a light. The idea is that it wasn't to give light. That was the concept. Similarly explained, that's the idea of the Rambam's opinion on the cups. The whole point of the Beis HaMikdash was not to receive, it was to give. And therefore the cups also weren't upright cups, they were upside down, because an upside down cup is a pouring cup, whereas an upright cup is to receive, is to drink. So that's why he said that same idea as the windows. Okay. Now, just an interesting little vort, which I'm going to share with you from the Ishvitzer, who just comments on this part there of why it comes after Yisroel was the giving of the Torah, Mishpatim, all these laws that we learned last week, and then comes Truma. He says the following. He says a nice little vort. He says that when the Yidden stood at Har Sinai, that's Parshas Yisroel, right? They were completely in a bubble, in a spiritual bubble. In other words, at that moment, nothing else existed. The world went quiet. They were uplifted to a completely different space, and they stood at Har Sinai, and this to them was just unbelievable, right? Suddenly, they come down from us. They come down, figuratively speaking, they went on Har Sinai, I'm saying, they come down from the experience, and Hashem is giving them Parshat Mishpatim, and suddenly there's all kinds of laws of how everything you do, not just when you're in a bubble, everything you do, all the kinyonim, all the acquisitions, all the witnesses, all the silver cases, everything you do during the day has to be focused on Hashem. Like everything you do as a halacha, right? That's Parshat Mishpatim. Parshat Mishpatim is almost anti-climax from Parshat Yisroel. But Yisroel is like the spiritual experience. Parshat Mishpatim is how you eat and how you sleep and how you transactions and how you judge people and how you steal and how you don't steal and how you buy things, how you sell things, and so on, right? So the Jews had a question. The question was, says the Ishvitzer, they kind of, he says, the way he puts it is, Hoysot tsa'oka belev Yisrael, there was a crying out of the heart of the Jewish people, how can we become so refined? I mean, that's an unbelievable expectation. You know, if you tell a person that once in a while they need to divorce themselves from their daily routine, from the reality of the mundane world, and lock into sort of a bubble of spiritual experience, that's okay. But you tell me that every day, a whole day, I should be focused, and everything I do should be focused on how I serve Hashem? That's an unbelievable expectation. You need to be very spiritually refined for that. How do we do that? We're just regular, physical, normal people. So came Hashem and said, mitzvah to build a mishkan. Give away some of your gold, your silver, your copper, which he says also Kabbalistically represents different parts of the person's personality. And by doing that, that will set you on the course to be refined, to be purified. Or you're purifying your bodily components and your physical experiences. And that will give you the koyach, that will give you the power to then live a life where everything is focused on Hashem. Okay, that's just a little word that he says. Now, today I'm going to do something a little bit different. I hope it's going to work. We have to experiment, right? I'm going to share with you one long thing, which means you have to concentrate a little bit, which I'm sure...
Always
right, okay? So it's not a problem.
Do we remember?
Yes. No, you always concentrate. I was saying you have to... I don't know what the word is in English, but when we were in Yeshiva, and we're learning a complicated Gemara, which would have like components, and you had, like, it was like you used to build the steps, and each step needed the next step. The Rosh Hashiva, or the teacher, used to say in Yiddish, halt kop. Halt kop means hold your head. In other words, halt kop, like stay with it.
Concentrate.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's not that complicated. I shouldn't have scared you that way. But I'm going to share with you an idea. I mean, the Mishkan has so many different perspectives, so many different ideas. I'm going to share with you an idea primarily based on a publication that I get every week called Shvilei Pinchas. I've quoted him before. He's a big Rav today in Eretz Yisrael. And he's got very creative, very amazing sort of things he does in the parasha sometimes. And this is one of them. I'm going to add in a few things in different places, but this is it's basically based on him. And let me give you a bit of context, a bit of background. So it's really about the connection between the Mishkan that they built in the Beis HaMikdash, in the desert, which was the mitzvah of this week's parasha, where Hashem said, in fact, let's just show you the pasuk so you clear with the pasuk. Have a look. Just have a look on page 444, the last line, pasuk Ches, verse 8, where Hashem said, "V'asu li mikdash, make for me a sanctuary, v'shachanti b'soicham, and I will dwell amongst them, amongst the Jewish people, amongst them." We've quoted very often the concept that Hashem really wants to dwell within every one of us. We'll have to build our own mishkan, but nevertheless, there's a central mishkan, which was a place for the divine presence. Now, what I'm going to show you today is a fascinating connection between the Mishkan and Torah. The look, yeah.
Before we start, anyone want the air conditioning off?
No.
Yeah, you call not too cold?
No.
Yeah, okay. So the connection between the Mishkan and Torah. Torah study, places of Torah, shuls, places of learning. A very, very fascinating connection. Now, it's interesting that the Mishkan definitely had different aspects, He doesn't bring this, but I'm just going to share with you first. The Ramban, there's a famous machlek, there's a famous dispute or difference of approach between the Ramban and the Rambam. The Rambam, the Ramban says, Nachmanides says, that the main part of the Mishkan was the divine presence, or was the fact that it was a place that the Shekhinah could dwell. And where did the Shekhinah dwell? Well, it was according to this, what is the main object? Oh gosh, I thought I turned off my phone. How did that happen? Okay. No, 1 second, sorry. Oh, here we are. No. The main part of the Mishkan was the Ura, was the Ark. Okay? Because that's where the main divine presence took place. So when Moshe Rabbeinu would go into the Mishkan and Hashem wanted to communicate to Moshe Rabbeinu, he would communicate to him through the Ura. The voice of Hashem would come from the Ark, right? Which you can already see, therefore, according to the Ramban, as already connected to Torah, because what was the Ark? The Ark was Torah, right? And we'll see how that all plays out in a minute. Now, the Rambam says something a bit different. The Rambam says, when he brings the mitzvah of building the Mishkan, he says, mitzvah is a positive commandment of the Torah, to build a house for Hashem, muchan liyos makrivim boy karbonis. That should be a place that you can bring sacrifices. According to the Rambam, the main part of the Beis HaMikdash was to have a house where you can serve Hashem through the bringing of sacrifices. Now, what I want to suggest is what we're going to do today really mostly follows the Ramban, actually, because we're talking about the connection between the Mishkan and Torah. Although they're not really arguing, perhaps, right? Really, what we could say is, and this will come clear at the end, that really the Ramban is describing what the Beis HaMikdash is, and the Ramban, perhaps, is describing what we do with the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, bringing korbanos, bringing sacrifices, is how we take the holiness of the Mishkan and implement it to elevate ourselves, the animal part, and so on and so forth. But we'll see, maybe at the end we'll come back to it and see how it all falls. Okay. So he says the following. He begins his whole thesis with a commentary, a very famous comment from the Bala Turim. Right? The Bala Turim says, he's called the Bala Turim because he was the first one to write a Shulchan Aruch, how we know it today. He was the Shulchan Aruch before Rabbi Yosef Karo's Shulchan Aruch. And he wrote the Shulchan Aruch in four different sections, known as the Arba Turim, the four rows, the four sections, right? And he wrote a commentary on Chumash, which is known as the Bala Turim. But really, the Turim goes on the Shulchan Aruch, but nevertheless, that's what the commentary of the Mishkan. Now, the Bala Turim is very famous for gematrias, for numerical values, for connecting different terminologies, different parts of the Chumash. Very, very, it's really a commentary got to do with the concept of remez. In other words, the different hints that we see in the words, and the psukim, and the verses, and the terminology, and so on. So, the Bala Turim makes a comment at the beginning of the parsha, where Hashem says, "V'yikhu li truma," give truma, give an offering for Hashem. And the Bala Turim says, but derech remez, he says, we can say this by way of hinting, that truma, the word truma, can be divided into two words, mem, Torah. Mem and Torah. Why mem? Mem is 40. And we know the Torah was given in sets of 40 days, right? When Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the mountain and he learned from Hashem the Torah, it always happened that Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain for sets of 40 days. So therefore we have the Torah, and the Torah is given in 40 days. That's what he says. So therefore that's the remark he makes, basically, right? Now the truth is, this is very much connected to what it says in the Zohar. The Zohar says that Truma is the concept of Torah, and he says it's got to do with Torah that was given in 40 days. Zohar makes a similar comment. It doesn't so much connect with the Gematria, but he says the same idea. Right? And therefore we see there's some connection between the Torah and the Mishkan. Now, there's also a Medrash which emphasizes this point. The Medrash says the following. It's a Medrash in Tana de Beliyahu, which is a famous Medrash. It says that when we learned in last week's Parsha, another connection between this week's Parsha and last week's Parsha, that at the end of last week's Parsha we read that the Yidden said to Hashem, Nase v'nishma. Right? When they received the Torah, they said, we will do and we will understand. That was the famous phrase of Nase v'nishma, by which the Gemara says that it was such an amazing thing that the 600,000 angels came and crowned all the Jews with two crowns, one for Nase, one for Nishma, and so on. So that was an amazing event. So the Medrash says that Miyad Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as soon as the Yidden said Nase v'nishma, Hashem said right away that we're going to tell, he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to tell the Jewish people to make a Mishkan, right? So again, we see the same thing over here. There's some sort of connection between what happened at Har Sinai, which was the giving of the Torah, and the building of the Mishkan. Torah and Mishkan. Because it was when the Yidden decided they're going to receive the Torah, and they said, Nasa v'nishma, according to the Medrash, that's when Hashem said they're going to build the Mishkan. So we need to understand what is the connection, right? It's all very nice to say that Truma means Torah Mem, and for the Zohar to say that it's connected to Torah that was given in 40 days, and for the Medrash says that it was because of the Torah that we got the Mishkan, but what we need to understand is what does it all mean? What is the connection between Torah and Mishkan? Okay? So, it begins with the Medrash. The Medrash says like this. The Medrash says, V'yikhu li Truma. Take for me a truma. Now, you know, we just learned that pasuk, right? Truth is, the wording in that pasuk is all strange. Because, first of all, the v'yikhu is wrong. The word v'yikhu is wrong. Or apparently wrong. Supposedly wrong. What does the word v'yikhu mean? Take. Right? What's Hashem asking us to do?
Give.
To give. So what does that mean? So the Medrash says, also another Medrash which connects it with Torah, but then brings a whole analogy, and that's where we're going to go from. The Medrash says like this. There's a pasuk that says, a pasuk in Mishle, Ki lekach toiv nosati lachem. Many people say it on Shabbos when you put back the Torah. Right? Referring to the Torah, Hashem says, I gave you a good lekach. Lekach means a product. And then the pasuk continues, Toirosi al ta'azoivu. Do not forsake the Torah. You know, the Torah is called a mekach. It's a product that you sell, you give. Right? In other words, says Hashem, this, I'm going to read you the Medrash. I should have copied it already, but let me read to you the words at least. Yesh lecha mekach. You have a product, says Hashem. Shemi shemochroi nimkar imoy. That whoever sold you this product was sold with it. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael, Hashem says to the Jewish people, Mocharti lechem toirasi, I sold you my Torah. Kaviyochol nimkarti imo, and so to speak, I was sold with it. Shenemra, because it says v'yikhu li truma, you will take me with the truma. In other words, now we see the connection. Torah mem, v'yikhu, you will take. When you learn Torah, you are acquiring the Torah. Not only acquiring the Torah, v'yikhu li truma, you are acquiring me with the truma. Understand? So Hashem and His Torah are inseparable. When we learn Torah, when we study Torah, when we make places to learn Torah, we're actually not only getting the Torah, we're getting Hashem, so to speak, with the Torah. Right? Says the Medrash, it's a mashal, an analogy. There was a king, we always give mashalim from kings, right? There was a king who says about a bas yechid, he had an only child, only daughter. So one of the kings wanted to come and marry her, whatever the case is. So he wanted to go and take this daughter of the king and take him away to his place and she become his wife. So Omar Le Amela, so the king said to the person like this, this daughter you want to take to be your wife, she's my only daughter, right? Lifroi shemenu eni yochel, I cannot live far away from her. On the other hand, to tell you not to take her, I can't do it. You married her, I gave her, you married her, so she's the color. So do me a favor, says the marshal. The king said to the guy like this, that wherever you go, wherever you're going to live with your wife, build an extra room for me. That I should be able to live there too. So at least I shouldn't be far away from my daughter. I should be with my daughter. Right. So too, Hashem said the Medrash. So too, Hashem said to the Jewish people, I've given you the Torah. Torah is like the daughter of Hashem. Torah is the color, right? That's why on Simchas Torah, we have Chos and Torah. We have the Chos is the Yidden. The Yidden of the Chos and the Torah is the color. Lifroi Sheimeni Einu Yochel. So Hashem says, but I can't separate. I've given you the Torah. I have. It's true. In fact, we know from the Gemara, there was a whole debate. The Malachim didn't want Hashem to give us the Torah. Malachim wanted the Torah to remain in heaven. Whatever that means, but that's the whole debate the Malachim had with Hashem. So Hashem says, no, I'm giving it to the Yidden. So I gave you the Torah. Lifroi Sheimeno Einu Yochel, but I cannot separate myself from the Torah. To tell you not to take it, I also can't say, I've given it to you. It's your wife. So do me a favor, make me a home where I can live. V'asuli Migdash, and that's what the Torah means when it says, make for me a Migdash. So it's the room that we built for Hashem to live with His Torah, which is why, of course, the Oren was in the Torah. Okay. I think I've told this before. We say that the Torah is the color. There was a story, a beautiful story. Rav Akiva Eiger, my Zayde told me this story. Rav Akiva Eiger, one of the greatest Torah giants. He lived like 250, 300 years ago. an unbelievable Torah. He was a Rav in Poznan, I think it was called. And the minhag was, every Simchas Torah, they gave him Chosn Torah. He was the Chosn Torah to end the last Aliyah of the Torah. So it says on the 50, when he got Chosn Torah for the 50th time, when he walked down the Bimah, he made the following comment for a lot enough people around him to hear. And he said, Sishon 50 yar, he said, it's already 50 years I'm having Chosn Torah, and I don't know the Kala well enough yet. In other words, I mean, the world's genius. But he says, I still don't know the Kala. It's so deep, it's so endless. Okay. But here we have in the Vart that Hashem says, I can't tell you not to take the Torah. I can't separate from the Torah. So build for me a Mikdash. Okay. And that's what it means, v'ichuli truma. In other words, you take me, because you're taking Torah, man. You're taking me with the Torah. So therefore, build a house for me to live. Okay. So what comes out like this, that it's interesting that the Tachlis, according to this, I mean, the different interpretations, but according to this, the purpose of building the Mishkan was making a place for Hashem to dwell together with the Torah, right? Which obviously fits in unbelievably what the Ramban says, that the main object was the Arayin. And in fact, this fits in with the whole Chazal. It tells us like this, that how did Hashem communicate the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu? Through the Beis HaMikdash, through the Mishkan, right? So it says like this, that there was when Moshe Rabbeinu would go into the, when Hashem called him, it says Moshe Rabbeinu would go to the door of the Mishkan, right? The voice of Hashem would come between the two Kruvim, which is on the Aron, from the Kaporis and the Kava, which the Torah describes in this week's Parsha. What was in the Aron was under the Kava? Was under the Kava was the Luchais, right? We know in the Aron there was the broken pieces of Luchais, the whole piece of Luchais. Some people say there was even a Sefer Torah there. So everything was about Torah, and the voice of Hashem would come from the top of the Aron to Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, we know that it was a miracle that happened, because what happened was it says that no one was able to hear when Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. On the other hand, there's another pasuk that says that Hashem's voice is as strong, we say it every Friday night, Kol Hashem Shovra Razim, the voice of Hashem is loud enough and strong enough to break cedar trees. So the miracle was that Moshe Rabbeinu would stand at the door of the Mishkan, the booming voice of Hashem, whatever that means, would come out and tell him the Torah, and it would stop at the door, it wouldn't go any further. In other words, even though naturally something of that magnitude of sound would travel further, it wouldn't. It would stop there, right? That's okay. So therefore, that's what we say. Now, that's all very nice and all very true. Now the question is, that's very nice as long as there was a Mishkan. So what happens in Golis? What happens when there's no Mishkan? What happens when there's no Beis HaMikdash? There's no Aron. The Aron is hidden somewhere. Or there's no Kodesh HaKadosh, the Holy of Holies. Right? So what's the Pshat? So the Pshat's like this. One of the Bells that Ebers brings us down, he says the following. We definitely have Torah today. We can't say we don't have the Torah, right? Because Matan Torah takes place every day. Torah is Nitzchi, Torah is eternal. Not only Torah is eternal, but we say that Matan Torah happens every day. How do we know this? Because every day we make a bracha on the Torah, and the language of the bracha is not in past tense, it's in present tense. We say, Baruch Ata Hashem, not Nasan HaTorah, Hashem gave us a Torah. Baruch Hashem, Noten HaTorah, Noisen HaTorah. Hashem is giving us a Torah, right? So whatever happened at Matan Torah, the whole experience happens every single day. In fact, Rashi brings this in Chumash. Rashi says that in the Shema, we say it every day. We say, all these things that I'm commanding you today. Says Rashi, what does it mean today? Says Rashi, every day we need to view Torah if it's been given today and it's something new, which should add to our enthusiasm and our commitment and so on. But what comes out of that is it's something that is given every single day. Okay. So one of the Belzer Rebbes in Leket Imre Kodesh brings like this. He says, but the Gemara tells us like this. There's a pasuk in Yecheskel that Hashem makes reference to. He tells the Navi, the prophet, that Hashem says, "I will be for you ve'ehaye lochem lemikdash ma'at, a small Beis HaMikdash, a small temple." What's mikdash ma'at? So the Gemara Megillah says, "Omar Rabbi Yitzchak says." This refers to the shuls and the place of learning in Bavel, meaning in Golis, right? In other words, that Hashem, the command to make a place for Hashem to dwell in that should be connected to the Torah, so that Hashem shouldn't be separate from the Torah, that's an eternal commandment. How do we do this post Pesach Hamikdash? How do we have this connection post Pesach Hamikdash? By establishing places for the Shechina to dwell connected to Torah. The same thing like the Mishkan, which is Batik Nesiyos, places of davening and places of learning. Which, by the way, is brought down halachically. Halachically say, it's brought down in Paskim, in Achronim, that how do we fulfill the mitzvah? It seems like an eternal mitzvah in this parasha. I mean, according to the way the Rambam learns, at least, that when in our parasha where it says, the Asul Migdash, you should make for me a temple, it's not only the Mishkan, because it calls it a Mikdash, right? That was a Mishkan, not a Mikdash. In every generation, it plays out differently. In the desert, was about building a Mishkan. When they came to Israel before that, Yerushalayim was also about a Mishkan. Then they built a Beis HaMikdash. And after that, we fulfill the mitzvah of building a temple by making places of learning, right? Which the places of learning are that place where Hashem can reveal Himself, and we can remember that Hashem is living right next to us, is present right next to us, because His connect is inseparable from the Torah, just like the Medrash that we learned before. Hashem said, "I have to have a room next to the Torah, so I shouldn't be separate from it." Okay. Which fits in tremendously with what the Gemara says, right? The Gemara says that Miyoyim Shecharav Beis HaMikdash, from the day the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Where's the Shekhinah? Says, where did the Shekhinah go? Right? So it says the Shekhinah went Dalid Amas Shal Halacha. That the Shekhinah is found in the four Amas of Halacha, meaning in the development of Halacha learning. In other words, in Torah study. Where's the Shekhinah? Still inseparable with the Torah. So it hasn't changed. If you want to connect to Hashem today, you have to learn Torah. Not only have to learn Torah, as the Mefarshim say, you also have to designate places which are places of holiness where Torah can flourish. Because that's just a replica of the way the Beis HaMikdash works. That's what the Gemara means. Okay. So that's how it worked in the Mishkan. That's how it works now. So let's try and understand the power of this whole concept. And this is where he develops it into the most amazing words. What does it mean that Hashem says, I need a place to live? What does that mean? We know, Meloi Chol Ha'aretz Kvayda, Hashem's presence is everywhere. Right? So obviously we know that means there's a difference between there's different levels, different layers, right? There's different layers of how Hashem presents Himself, so to speak, right? There's different levels of revelation, different degrees of revelation, and so on. So he brings a fascinating, this is in itself just a beautiful way of explaining a Gemara. There's a Gemara that talks about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was one of the 80 Talmidim of Hillel, right? So the Gemara says that Hillel had 80 Talmidim. The greatest of them was Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel. The lowest of them, so to speak, or the youngest or the lowest of them was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Gemara talks about Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, that his piety was unbelievable, his holiness was unbelievable, to the point that when Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel would learn Torah, if a bird flew over, it would be burnt up from the holiness. That's how powerful it was. By the way, he wrote a Targum and Chumash. Incidentally, we know where he's buried, right? He's buried in Amuka, if everyone's ever been there. It's a really windy place, not far from Tzfas. Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, it's his cave where people go there all the time. So he was the greatest. Who was the lowest, so to speak? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, don't think you're the lowest. In other words, he was like a stammer guy. Where it goes and talks about like the unbelievable greatness of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That he was, everything was, he was completely well-versed in every part of Torah. He was holy, the whole thing, right? At the end, the Gemara ends off this description of Yochanan ben Zakkai that he knew everything, and he knew Dovra Gadol and Dovra Katan. Big things, small things, in Torah, everything. Says the Gemara, what do you mean by Dovra Gadol and Dovra Katan? What's this big thing or small thing? So the Gemara says like this, it's talking about the two parts of Torah. Dovra Gadol means Maisamacha, means like Kabbalah, like understanding the celestial beings and the stuff that Yecheskel revealed to us. And Dovra Katan means this lower thing in Torah, means the regular Torah study, which we all learn. We learn Gemara, we learn the Talmud, the Mishnah, whatever the case is. And how does the Gemara refer to regular learning? The Gemara says, Dovra Katan is Havayis the Abaya V'Rova. It's the inquiries, the discussions of Abaya and Rova. Now, Abaya V'Rova were two great Amoraim from the time of the Gemara. That there were about 6 or 7 generations of Tanoim, there were about 6 or 7 generations of Amoraim, these are rabbis of the Gemara. Abai and Rava were two very famous Amoraim. They were in the 4th generation of the Amoraim, right? Which is very, very nice. But I mean, there were lots of people who had discussions in the Gemara. Okay, so it's true that almost every topic in Shas contains Abai and Rava. That is true. right? Which is probably the simple reason why the Gemara does that, because like if you want to sort of talk about regular Gemara learning, you'd say the discussions of Abaye and Rav. Okay, but it could be Rabbi Yochanan and Ishlakish, it could be other people, Rashi Bayechai. I mean, why Abaye and Rav necessarily? So that's the question. Why do we specifically choose that we'd refer to regular Torah study as the discussions of Abaye and Rav? So he says, to understand this, only at the end we'll come back to this whole thing we're talking about the Mishkan and Torah, we'll see how it all fits in. To understand this, we have to quote another Gemara about Abaye v'Rava. The Gemara says like this, that Abaye v'Rava, when they were little children, they were sitting in front of a Rabbah, not to be confused with Rava, okay, there's Abaye and Rava, and their teacher was Rava. He was the third generation. So when Abaye and Rava were children, they were once sitting in front of Rabbah. And they're learning Torah. And then I think they were benching or came down to make a bracha on food or benching, I don't remember exactly. So Rabbah said to them, L'mimu varchinon, who are you making a bracha to? Amrileis, they said to him, L'rachmona, to Hashem. Right? So he asked them, L'rachmona, heicha Yosef. And where is Hashem? Where is he living? So Rabbah, it says, Rabbah pointed to the roof, like upwards. Right? Abaye, he went out the room, and he pointed to the heaven. Okay? So Rabbah said to them, this is what the Gemara says, we have to unpack this Gemara, let me just say what the Gemara says first. So Rabbah said to them, both of you are going to be big rabbis. And that's what the Gemara says, that's the expression that was used in that Talmud, there's a famous Aramaic expression that was used in the Talmud of the Talmud, Inish butzin butzin mekatfe yediyah. That people say that pumpkins, you can tell when they're very small, what kind of pumpkins they're going to grow into. It was a Babylonian expression, right? So in other words, by whatever, I could tell they're going to... Okay. So, what does this mean? What was so unbelievable, right? Rabbah pointed to the roof. Abaye pointed to the outside, yeah? So what's the... I mean, yeah. I think some children could do that today too. If you ask the words Hashem, they'll go like this, yeah? But there's something about one point at the roof, one went outside. There was some partnership going on between them, and something was very deep that Rabbah recognized that they were sort of displaying, and it prompted him to say, these are small pumpkins, but I can see they're going to be very big. Right? Okay. So in order to explain this, he explains a Gemara, and brings another Gemara, in Chagiga, which has two ways to explain it, but we're going to follow the way of Rabbeinu Hananel and the Kabbalists, the way they explain the Gemara. And it's like this. The Gemara says that in Yirmiyahu, in Tanakh, they quote a pasuk, Yirmiyahu says that if you don't listen to Hashem, if you don't listen to Hashem, says the pasuk, b'mistorim tifke nafshi, in a place called Nistorim, like a hidden place or whatever, My soul will cry, says Hashem. I'm going to cry if you don't listen to me. Mipnei geva, and all because of your arrogance. So Yirmiyahu was given Musar. He was reprimanding the Jewish people. Yirmiyahu was the Navi that tried to save the Bnei Yisrael from the Churban, from the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash. He begged them to do tshuva. They wouldn't. And he brought many, many messages from Hashem for them to do tshuva. And they wouldn't listen. Not only would listen, but there was a time that they went so against him, they put him in jail. But anyway, but one of the messages from Hashem was, if you don't listen, b'mistorim tifke nafshi, I'm going to cry b'mistorim because of your arrogance. Right? So, what does that mean? So the Gemara says, what do I mean b'mistorim, which seems to mean hiddenness? It means there's a place that Hashem has that's called mistorim. Whatever that means, right? Okay. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. There's Hashem cries, right? Doesn't it say about Hashem, Oiz v'chedvo b'mekoymoi, that where Hashem lives, so to speak, in the place of Hashem, there's strength and happiness, Oiz and chedvo. Remember those words, because they're important words. Oiz v'chedvo, the strength and happiness, right? Says the Gemara, no problem. It depends where Hashem is. Now again, all these things are figurative, obviously, but they're talking about different layers, different levels, and so on. It depends where Hashem is. Bebote gavoi or bebote broi. It depends if he's in his inner chambers or his outer chambers. What does that mean? Is he inside or is he outside? Right? What does that mean? So, Rabbeinu Hananel explains like this. That in his outer chambers, Hashem cries, which is obviously like a lower level, right? But in his inner chambers, he doesn't cry. Right? In other words, the inner chamber of Hashem, whatever that means, the inner chamber of Hashem, about which the Pasuk says, Oiz v'chedvo b'mekoymoi, that Hashem's strength and happiness is where Hashem is. In that inner chamber, there's no such thing as crying. There's always just happiness. Where is there more of a challenge? Where can there be a concept of Hashem crying, whatever that means? In the outer chambers, in the outside. Yeah? Which is this the way? That's the way Rabbeinu Hanana learns the Gemara, that's where the Zohar learns the Gemara, and so on. Now, what's his outer chambers and what's his inner chambers? So let's go backwards a little bit. What do we say the inner chamber is? What was the pasuk that the Gemara used? Oiz v'chedva b'mekoymoi, right? Strength and happiness in its place. Where do we find the word oiz, strength? You say it every Friday night. For l'chadoidi. No? Hashem oz lamo yitein. Hashem is giving strength to the nation. What's it referring to? So that's just nice to know, by the way. So you know when it says Hashem lamabul yashav, it says Hashem is returning back to the flood. Right at the very end of it, David, just follow Hadali, the chapter of Tilim, we say, goes like this. 1 second. I'll show you. Here we are. Oh. It's a very cryptic pasuk. It says, Hashem lamabul yashav, the king at the flood, v'yeshu Hashem melech la'olam, and Hashem is the king forever. And then it says, Hashem oz lamo yitein, Hashem is giving strength to his nation, Hashem yivarech lamo b'shalom, Hashem is blessing his nation with peace. So the Medrash says, what does this pasuk mean? It means when Hashem gave the Torah, the whole world changed, the whole world shook, the whole world went silent afterwards, right? And the nations were scared, they didn't know what was going on, something was happening in the creation over here. So they went to Bilam the prophet, and they said, Hashem lamabul yashav, Hashem, this is the flood again, we're going to have a flood soon. Something's happening, and they were scared. I mean, it wasn't that, relatively speaking, it was not so long after the flood. And they said to Bilam, the flood's going to happen again. Bilam said, don't worry, it's not the flood. What is happening is Hashem oz lamo yitein. Hashem is giving strength to his nation. Right? So then we learn, one of the sources, we learn that the word oz, the word strength and peace, is synonymous with Torah. Right? So Hashem oz lamo yitein. So now let's go back to the Gemara. Hashem says, I'm going to cry if you do the wrong thing. Says the Gemara, there's no crying by Hashem, because it says, oz v'chedva b'mekoymoi, strength and happiness in his place. So he says, no, it depends. That's only in his inner chambers, right? Where Hashem is really living in his inner house, in his throne room, so to speak. But outside, there is crying. Right? So now we have to say, what's his inside, what's his outside? So first of all, we consider what the inside is. Inside is Torah, because oz v'chedva b'mekoymoi. There's strength in Hashem's inner chamber, there's strength and happiness. Torah brings happiness. How do we know Torah brings happiness? From halacha. What's the law on Tisha B'Av? You're not allowed to learn Torah. Or, God forbid, someone loses a loved one and they're sitting Shiva, they're not allowed to learn Torah. Only the parts of Torah which are specifically sad. But otherwise, not learn Torah. Why? Because it says Torah makes a person happy. Pikudei Hashem Yesharim, says the Pasuk, Mesamchei Lev. The commandments of Hashem are upright, Mesamchei Lev, they make the heart happy. And it has a direct consequence in halacha. You're not supposed to learn Torah in times where you have to be sad. Right? Because Torah makes you happy. So therefore, when it says that Hashem in his inner chamber is oz v'chedva b'mekoymoi, that goes back to what we said before, that Hashem is inseparable with his Torah. In other words, where does Hashem live in his throne room? What does he live with the whole time? He lives with the Torah. Hashem, like the Zohar says, oraisa v'kutcha b'richa kulachat, the Torah and Hashem is one. Yeah. So that's the inner chamber. So what's the outer chamber? So what do we mean by the outer chamber? What is the outer chamber? So he brings a beautiful thing, another Gemara. The Gemara says like this. It says, in Tehillim, it says, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. What does that mean? It means like this, that if a person wants to learn Torah, if he wants to learn Torah, if you want to connect to the Torah, if you want to connect to the wisdom of the Torah, we've spoken about this many, many times, the Torah is not just a subject. Torah is divine wisdom, right? If a Yid really wants to have a connection to Torah, which is the purpose really of how we become completely one with Hashem, is by learning Torah. But that needs a preparation. What's the preparation? Preparation is to fear Hashem, fear of Hashem. In other words, humility, subservience to Hashem, complete commitment, giving ourselves over to Hashem, that's a prerequisite to learning Torah. If someone learns Torah with arrogance, someone learns Torah without the preparation, then the Torah he learns is not going to be connecting him or her to Hashem. In fact, the Gemara says, most powerful thing, it doesn't bring us here, but the Gemara says the most powerful thing, that the Torah is compared to an ointment, like a potion. Zocha, if a person merits, nasaloi samachaim, it'll become a potion of life. Right? Loi zocha, if a person doesn't merit, it'll become samamavis, it'll become a poison. The very Torah you learn can become a poison. Why? Because if you're not ready for it, then you're not ready for it. In other words, you have to prepare. Right, that's why the Gemara says you're supposed to daven before you learn. In other words, the order symbolically of it doesn't mean you can't learn before you daven, but it means the concept of davening comes before learning. Davening is when we commit to Hashem, we give ourselves over to Hashem, we promise we're going to live our lives by Hashem's values, and so on and so forth. That's a prerequisite to learning Torah. So the Gemara in Shabbos says, in the name of Rabbi Bar Avuna, that a person who has Torah, he learns Torah, but he doesn't have Yirat Shamayim, he doesn't have fear of God, he's like a gizbar, a treasurer, who gave you the keys to the house of... Gizbar means someone who's like guarding treasures, right? And wants to give you some. But he gave you the inner keys, but he didn't give you the outer keys. He gave you the keys to the room inside, but he didn't give you the keys to the gate, right? Because the yira, the fear of Hashem, that's like the gate to the outside gate. That's like the keys to the outside gate. That's how you get into that's how you create a connection, b'chlal. In other words, who said you can have a relationship with God altogether? So that's Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim is the keys to the outside gate. The keys to Torah is the keys to the inside gate, right? Oh, so then, all makes sense then. So what is in the inner chamber of Hashem? The Torah. What is the outer gates? That's the Yirat Shamayim, right? So what creates the ultimate connection? What's the inner connection with Hashem? The concept of Torah. We want to be connected to Hashem, so Hashem won't separate from the Torah. Right? Hashem is one with the Torah. In his inner chamber, he's one with the Torah. Therefore, what we have to do is, we have to create places for Hashem to be with the Torah. In the time of the Mishkan, that was the Mishkan, Beis HaMidrash, Beis HaMikdash. Now it's the Shul, the Beis HaMidrash, the place where Hashem can live together with the Torah. What's the point of it? The point of it, obviously, is that we should connect to the Torah. How are we going to connect to the Torah? How are we going to come into the Mishkan? So we have to have the keys to the outside first, right? That's what the Gemara means, he says, when the Gemara talks about the outer chamber and the inner chamber. In other words, there's Hashem in his essence, the ultimate connection to Hashem, the intimate connection to Hashem, that's connecting to the Torah. But Hashem says, if you don't listen to me, that was the message through Yirmiyahu. If you don't listen to me, I'm going to cry. In other words, you're messing up the outer gate. So the outer gate is where can I be affected? You don't have Yirat Shamayim. So Hashem in his revealed state on the outside, not in his inner chamber, on the outside, the way he relates to us, that relationship is going to be damaged. And if it's damaged, we won't be able to get inside because we won't have the keys to the inside. I mean, we'll have the keys to the inside, but we'll have the keys to the outside. That's what I mean. Right? Because one of the keys... Yeah, it's all making sense? You with me? Okay. So now we can understand... In the desert, traveled with them.
Traveled with them.
Traveled all the time. Yeah. Right. So he brings a few different things. For example, we have that pasuk at the beginning of wisdom is the Yirat Hashem. Also, it says if a person has Yirat Shamayim, if he has fear of sin before he has wisdom, then his wisdom will last. If he doesn't, if his wisdom is not preceded by Yirat Shamayim, his chokhmah won't last. In other words, we cannot really have access to the Torah unless we can commit to living by the Torah on the outside. So the Torah is the inner connection, right? Yirat Shamayim is really the living by the Torah on the outside. If we can't commit to that, then we can't really have a proper connection to the Torah. So therefore, when we talk about, the Gemara talks about Bate Gavoye, Bate Broye, the outside house and the inside house, that's what it means. The outside house is Hashem's interaction with us on the outside. That's where we have to have Yirat Shamayim. That's where we have to fear Hashem. Hashem says, you don't listen to me, I'm going to cry. Says the Gemara, but there's no crying by Hashem. Yes, there is, on the outside. In other words, on the outside house, that's where we can damage our relationship with Hashem. That's where there's pain. That's where, so to speak, Hashem will feel the pain. But on the inside, Hashem is always connected with the Torah. Hashem is always connected with the Torah. And on that level, there's no crying, there's no pain, because Hashem is with the Torah, and there's only strength and happiness there. Right? There's no crying there. Now, if we want, we can get in there. We can have a connection to the Torah. How? But we've got to get through the gate first. Getting through the gate means you have to go through the outside. And that's how we connect to the Torah. He says, now let's go back to the story of Abaye v'Rava. Why is Abaye v'Rava? So, Rabbah asks, who are you benching? Who are you davening to? They say Hashem. So he says to them, where's Hashem? Right? So Abaye goes outside and he points to the heaven. Rava stays inside and points to the roof. What was this? And Rabbah says, wow, you guys are good. It was a partnership. Abaye went outside and heaven. He says, first you got to go, you want to connect out to Hashem, we're benching out to Hashem. You're asking us where Hashem is, let us give you the process. Abaye goes out and he points to heaven. He says, first of all, you got to go outside, you have to have Yirat Shamay. You have to have fear of heaven, which is the outside house. Then Rava says, the other one, his friend, Rava says, then you can come inside and Hashem is in the inside, the Batei Gavoi, the inner house. So it wasn't just a matter of a kid pointing upwards because Hashem lives upstairs. No, it was a depth of wisdom that was saying, how do you connect to Hashem? Hashem is in the inner house. Hashem is inseparable from Torah. Hashem is in, and it's symbolized and it's expressed by building homes for Hashem with the Torah, right? Homes that you can serve Hashem and learn Torah in those homes, because that's where Hashem is. But if you want to get to Hashem, you have to commit to the outside. That's why Abaye goes outside and he points to heaven. That's the Yirat Shamayim on the outside. And then there's the pointing to the inside house. That's the inner chamber, and that's why the Mishkan was a place where Hashem dwelt. In other words, that Batei Gavoi, that inner chamber of Hashem, which is with Hashem, so to speak. When He told us to build the Mishkan, when He gave us the Torah, He says, "Listen, I live in the inner chamber. In the inner chamber, I live with the Torah. I'm giving you the Torah, but I'm not separated from the Torah. So it's a package deal. V'yikhuli truma. You want to learn Torah, comes with me. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to transport that inner chamber to this world. Build me a place in this world. Hashem fills the whole world, but that's the outer chamber. But build me a place in this world where I can live, where I can transport the inner chamber into this world, so that you can have access to it and I can be there." So in other words, the Mishkan, and then by extension, the Beis HaMedrash, the Shul, the place of learning, right? That's what it is. That's the inner chamber of Hashem on this world. It's the transportation of Hashem's inner chamber in this world, where Hashem lives inseparably from His Torah. And then Hashem says, you can get there. How are you going to get there? You have to go through the outside first. First, commit to the outer chamber. That's Abaye's message, pointing to heaven, outside world. Have Yirat Shamayim, and then through Yirat Shamayim, if you have the proper requisite, you can then go into the inner chamber, and you can connect with me, and the Torah in the inner chamber. But that's how you got to get there. And that's the whole story of Abaye v'Rava, and that's how it all works. Just to add, just to bring in the Rambam as well, because that's the way a person's day works. When we get up in the morning, the first thing we need to do is say Modeh Ani. We have to surrender to Hashem, Yirat Shamayim. In fact, some people even say, it's not Nusari, but others say, you're Reichit Chochma Yirat Hashem in the morning. Right? And that's the whole idea of davening. In other words, you have to get away from the physicality, or the sleeping, and connect to Hashem. After the Gemara says, then you got to learn Torah. So you got to daven. And after you daven, then you have to learn Torah. Because once you've established Yirat Shamayim, once you've established the commitment to be subservient to Hashem, you've gone through the outer chain, and now you can go to the inner chain and connect with Hashem. Then the Gemara says that you can go out into the world and bring Hashem into the world. And perhaps that's the Rambam's part of the Mishkan, about bringing korbanos, bringing sacrifices. Because bringing sacrifices is all about elevating the animal soul. Once we've connected to Hashem on a spiritual level, then we can now go to the Rambam's part of the Mishkan, which is bringing sacrifices and bringing Hashem into the physical.